All right, Jamal, say good morning. Let's begin. So we left off. Today's daf is Sadik Dalid 94. We are picking up on Sadik Gimel Amud Beis. So we left off with... Oh, no, I'm sorry. I take that back. I'm so used to starting on the previous Amud. Yeah, we're actually starting on Sadik Dalid tonight. Look at that. Look at that. So I'm going to say top line. Amalu Rav Shesha is amazing. Amalu Rav Shesha. So Rav Shesha is the line. So I'll say again, remember, just to reorient ourselves a little bit. So on Sadik Gimel Amud Beis, the Gemara was talking about the ability of an Eid Echad, of a singular witness, to be able to affect change. So the issue the Gemara was discussing is an Eid Echad believed to deliver testimony that would free a woman from her Yavama and allow her to go ahead and marry into the general population. That was the Shaila now that we were dealing with. So the Gemara says, Amru Rav Sheshes Tinisua. Rav Sheshes, we learned this. Amrullah, they said to her, now we'll discuss who the they is, Meis Fa'aleich, your husband died, Va'achagach Meis Benech, and then your son died. Remember, this was the case of where a husband and son went overseas together. They both died, and now the Shaila is, what order did they die in? And obviously, that's not just a detail, but rather, again, that's exceptionally important. Exceptionally important. So the Gemara says that, let's say they told her, your husband died and then your son died, in which case, Rabbah says she would not be subject to Yibum. So essentially, what they were telling her again is that she's permitted to go ahead and marry into the general population. And then what happened? Vinises, she married a regular guy. She married just someone other than her Yavam. And then afterwards, they told her, no, it was the opposite. Your son died, and then your husband died, which meant that at the moment that her husband died, he died childless, in which case, again, she is subject to the laws of Yibum. But of course, in the interim, she's married to someone other than her Yavam. So she has to leave husband number two, because again, that is an illegal marriage, because she's subject to the laws of Yibum. And furthermore, again, her children, the earlier ones and the later ones, are mamzerim. So Marcel, one second. Hey, Chidami, what's the case over here? If you want to say it's a case of two witnesses, and two witnesses meaning that two witnesses show up and first tell her that her husband died and then her son died, and as a result, she gets remarried. And then a second set of witnesses, and then she does get remarried to someone other than the Yavam. And then a second set of witnesses show up and say that no, the order in fact was your son died and then your husband died, and therefore you're subject to Yibum. My chazit is samchisahani, samachahani. We'll say, remember again, when you have two witnesses against two witnesses, who says that the latter pair should have any more credence than the first? Right? So you have two against two. So I would say leave things status quo, meaning you believe the first two. The second two shouldn't be any more powerful than the first two. Rather, va'od, furthermore, mamzer, how could the Mishnah say that the children she had from the second marriage are mamzerim? At most, what? Suffolk mamzer. So remember, if you have two witnesses against two witnesses, that's those children that she has from the second marriage can't be vadai mamzerim. They can't be certain mamzerim. At most, they're what? At most, they're suffolk mamzerim. I v'chitema lo dak. So maybe you'll say, well, that's what the Mishnah meant. When the Mishnah said the children from the second marriage are mamzerim, it meant that they're suffolk mamzerim, meaning the Tana of the Mishnah, the author of the Mishnah, was not so precise in his wording. Well, that can't be. I'll tell you why. V'ha midiktani seifa harishon mamzer v'achron eino mamzer. Because it will say, in the latter case, the Mishnah, remember we spoke about this yesterday, this was the case ultimately again where witnesses came along and said that husband died, she got remarried, then a witness came along and said that no, he was actually alive at the time you got married to your second husband, but now he's dead. So remember, in that case, what did the Mishnah say? The children that she had in the earlier part of her marriage, i.e. when husband number one was still alive, are mamzerim, but the children she had later on in her marriage are not mamzerim. So you see over there, the Mishnah uses the verbiage of mamzer precisely and specifically. Shmamina d'dafka katoni. See from here that when the Mishnah calls the kid a mamzer, the Mishnah doesn't mean suffolk mamzer, but rather the Mishnah means what? A mamzer vadai. Ella, so what's the case here? So let's remember, we're trying to figure out the case. The Mishnah's case over here is she was told that both her husband and son died. But the order, of course, is very specific. So the first testimony she received is that her husband died and then her son died, which meant, again, that she is not subject to the laws of Yibum. She marries, therefore, another guy, regular good guy. What happened? She has kids with him. Then testimony, second set of testimony. We don't know what the testimony is yet, meaning who's giving the testimony. But second testimony comes and says, no, the order that you were told was wrong. But in fact, what? In fact, again, your son died first and then your husband, which meant that at the time that your husband died, he died childless. In which case, what? You are subject to the laws of Yibum. So now she is illegally married to another man. So the Mishnah said she has to leave husband number two. And furthermore, again, kids from that marriage are mamzerim. So Gemara says, what's the case? Ella lav chad. Rather, what's the case? The case must be, Rabosai, is where the first testimony was delivered by an Eid Echad. Right? So the Eid Echad was one who showed up and said, your husband died, and then your son died. The time of the asu betray, and then I will say the second set of testimony was delivered by who? Two witnesses. So the first testimony was given by an eid echad. The second testimony was given by two witnesses. The time of the asu betray achashua, and the reason Rabbi says is why we overturn her life is why? Because two witnesses have the ability to what? Have the ability to overturn one. So you see from here that what the reason why the testimony of the first of the eid echad is refuted is because two witnesses come. But Rabbi says we learn a very important principle. Halav hachi. What do we see from here? That if the two witnesses would not have come, what would be the halacha? Mehemin, that an Eid Echad would be believed. And Rabbi said, what is the Eid Echad believed for in this particular case? The Eid Echad is believed to exempt her from Yibum. So you see from here that in fact an Eid Echad is believed to exempt her from Yibum. To which the Gemara says, no, the Olam Treu Trei. No, it's not true. Actually, this case set this case up differently. This case is actually a case of two and two, right? Two witnesses are delivering each testimony. So the Gemara says, I ukutu amar of achar ba minyuni. Be'edei hazama, hachnai be'edei hazama. Rabbi said, it's very interesting. And what's the case? The case over here is with edei hazama. Rabbi said, we'll get in Meretz Hashem to Masechas Makos. So what are edei hazama? Edei hazama means witnesses show up and they don't necessarily refute the material of the first group's testimony. Rather, what they say is, imanu hayisem. There is no way that you could have witnessed that which you say you have witnessed. Why? Because you were with us at the time of the event that you supposedly witnessed. So we'll say, in this case over here, you're right. Normally, if you have two witnesses against two witnesses, so pretty much we keep the status quo as it is. But in this case over here, what's happening is what? Two witnesses come along and say that we saw that your husband died and then your son died. So fine, so she married someone else. Then two more witnesses come along and say, that's impossible, you cannot have seen that. You cannot have seen that. Why? Because Lamaisa, again, you were with us. You were with us. You weren't overseas. You weren't over there. You were at the ball game with us that particular day. So we'll say that uproots the first set of witnesses. So that's the case of where you can have two against two. Amri Rav Mordechai l'Ravashi, Amri Rav Acha l'Ravashi, Tashma, Ein Ha'isha Ne'emet. So I'll say, remember, we're still trying to figure out over here. Here's what we've established so far. An Eid Echad is permitted to go ahead and tell a woman that her husband died. An Eid Echad is permitted to go ahead and is believed to make a woman obligated in Yibum. And an Eid Echad, so we're trying to figure out right now, is an Eid Echad believed to exempt a woman from Yibum? Meaning, Rabbi Yossi, remember, he's not coming along and saying, I exempt her from Yibum, but he's testifying about circumstances that would exempt her from Yibum. So trying to figure out, is he permitted to do that? Does he have that power? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, but Amar Rav Acha Rav Ashi, Tashma, Ein Ha'isha Ne'emenes Lomar Mesi V'Misha Nasa. A woman is not believed to say that my brother-in-law died, and therefore I'm permitted to marry someone else. Also, let's say she's subject to Yibum, but she says, she testifies, I saw my brother-in-law died. So she's not believed to give that testimony. So what happens? And furthermore, she's not permitted to give testimony to say, my sister died, and therefore, again, I am permitted to marry her husband. Remember, both say, you can't marry your wife's sister while your wife is still alive. So meaning, even if you're no longer married to her. So even if a man divorces his wife, he still can't marry her sister. The only time he can marry her sister is when the wife dies. So a woman is not believed to say, my brother-in-law died, and therefore I'm not subject to Yibum. Or she's not believed to say, my sister died, and therefore I can marry my brother-in-law. So the Gemara says, he nihi de lo mehemna. Ha eid echa mehemen. So we'll say, now again, what we can infer from here is, she, the woman herself, is not believed, but what? An Eid Echad, one witness, would be believed. would be believed. So in other words, we'll say a one witness would be believed to exempt her from Yibum and allow her to marry into the general population. Furthermore, the Gemara says, well, Tameich, using that logic, Ema Sefer, look at the end of this teaching, look at the end of this Braisa, Ein Ha'ish Lomar Meis Achi She'ayavim Es Ishto. A man is not believed to say, my brother died, and therefore, again, I should do Yibum with his wife. And Rabbi said, we'll discuss all of these cases. V'lo meisa ishti she'asa sachosa. Nor is a man believed to say, my wife died, and therefore I am permitted to marry her sister. So the Gemara says, hu nihu delo mehemen. So could we infer from here also that it's he who is not believed to give this testimony? Ha eid echad mehemen. But an eid echad would be believed. So let's analyze this. So I understand why an eid echad is believed in the case of a woman. Rabbi said, because remember, our entire premise is what? Why is an eid echad, one witness, believed, even though normally, again, you require two witnesses? Because the ma'aseh mishum iguna, because in order to avoid any type of aguna situation, we're mekel. However, elagabe ish, my ikalamemar. But Rabosai, by a man, there's no aguna situation. Remember, again, technically speaking, a man doesn't get into an aguna situation. Why is that? Because technically speaking, a man can marry someone else. Rabosai, again, presently where there's a ban on polygamy, so you can have male aguna situations. But the mice, from the Gemara's perspective, why would you ever need to rely on an eid echad to allow a man to do something? You should require two eidim, because technically speaking, you never have to relax the standards of testimony. To which the Gemara says, Ella, ki itztrich l'Rabbi Akiva. But rather, Rabosai, when we need this statement, and this is the statement that a woman is not believed to say, Meis Yevami, this is the statement of the Brayso we just quoted. When do we need it? What is the meaning of this statement? That a woman is not believed to say, my brother-in-law died, and therefore I'm not subject to Yibam, and therefore I can marry into the general population. Rabbi Akiva itztrich. It's necessary according to Rabbi Akiva. Why? What Rabbi Akiva say? Sagadait chamina, ho'yovam Rabbi Akiva, yesh mamzer mechai ve'lavin. See, I would have thought like this, Rabbi say. Since Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that you could have a mamzer from chai ve'lavin, remember we spoke about this extensively, that Rabbi Akiva holds that if you have a marriage that is prohibited by a lav, such a union can produce a mamzer. So I might have thought that because according to Rabbi Akiva, a marriage that is prohibited by a lav can produce a mamzer. Ema chaisha akil kula dizara v'daika. Remember, listen to this. If a woman comes along and says that my brother-in-law died, meaning, let's say again, remember the progression, her husband dies without children, therefore she's subject to Yibum. She comes along to Beis Din and she says, listen, my brother-in-law died, the Yavam died, and let's say he's the only surviving brother. My Yavam died, and therefore what? I should be permitted to marry to the general population. So the Mishnah, the Braisa ruled, she is not believed. So the Gemara says, why is this statement necessary? It's necessary according to Rabbi Akiva. Because Rabbi Akiva followed this chain of this flow of thought. Because Rabbi Akiva holds that if a woman marries a man to whom she is prohibited by a lav, that marriage will produce a mamzer. So Rabbi Akiva, remember, which means, let's plug this into this case. If a woman is subject to Yibum and she marries someone other than her Yavam, that is a lav, which means that union would produce mamzerim. So I might have thought that according to Rabbi Akiva, before a woman marries someone other than her Yavam, what is she going to do? She's going to do her due diligence to make sure that indeed her Yavam is dead. And therefore, again, if she comes with this claim that her Yavam is dead, we should support or we should believe this claim, because again, she's not going to risk having children that are mamzerim. Kamashmalam Rabbi Akiva, listen to this, Rashi points out over here, it's very interesting. Actually the parentheses, which the Bach takes out, but it looks very interesting. Dakalkula di da chaisha, al kalkula di zara lo chaisha. Kamashla Nabosai, that very often she'll just be worried about not messing herself up, but not necessarily vigilant about the status of her children. So because marrying this man other than the Yavam does not do anything to her per se, but only messes up her offspring, we don't just simply believe her to give this testimony. So the Gemara essentially says is that at the end of the day, I might have thought, again, this doesn't represent such a novelty for us that she shouldn't be believed in this case. It represents novelty according to Rabbi Akiva, because his according to Rabbi Akiva, the stakes are much higher, i.e. Mamzerus. I might have thought we should believe her, because she wouldn't make such a statement like that without doing her due diligence. Kamashmalan, we do not accept her testimony to say that the Yavam died. Rava Amar Rava says, Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Yivama. I will say, Sarava comes along and says, no, an Eid Echad is believed by Yavama. That Rabbi will say, remember, when we say Ne'eman B'Yivama, that means that an Eid Echad is believed to say that a woman is not obligated in Yibum. Now, I will say, as I said before, the case is not where the Eid Echad is showing up and saying you're not obligated in Yibum. The case, like what we said before, where let's say husband and son go overseas, and the Eid says your husband died first and your son second, which effectively makes her exempts her from Yibum. So Rava said an Eid Echad is believed to give testimony that would exempt a woman from Yibum. Mikavach Omer, and we learned it from Mikavach Omer. What's the Kavach Omer? Le Isser Kare Sitarta, Le Isser Lav, Lo Kol Shekain. People say, listen to the Gemara, this is pretty logical, Rava says. If an Eid Echad is believed to say that a woman's husband died, right? And I both remember, if you say that her husband died, then what does that mean? You're permitting her to get remarried. I both say, if that aid is wrong, then what is she doing? Yeah. She's committing right, besides the mamzeros, even before there are offspring, it's adultery, right? Adultery is punishable by death. So if we're going to go, and I both say, now what's the prohibition of, if a woman is subject to yibum, what's the prohibition involved with marrying another man? It's a lav. It's a lav, right? It's a prohibition. So the Gemara says, listen, if we believe in Eid Echad, to allow her to do something that potentially carries the penalty of death, so of course they're going to believe in Eid Echad to allow her to do something that only carries the penalty of a lav. It's kind of logical. So one of the rabbis said to Rava, one second, he asked Matochiach, but this is not an ironclad kavachomer. Why? Because again, Rabbi say she herself could prove this point. What does that mean? Dile iser kari sitarta, that Rabbi say, remember again, a woman is believed to go ahead and testify that what? That her husband died. Right? A woman is believed to say, we were overseas, right? And my husband died. She's believed. So you see again, Isser Karis means, so she is permitted to go ahead and give testimony that would allow her to remarry, which if she's wrong, carries the Isser Karis. Le Isser Lav, lo itarta. But yeah, what did we just say? She's not believed to what? She's not believed to say that my Yavam died. Right? She's not believed to say that my brother-in-law died. Ve ela ihi my time alo mehemna. But I will say, so why is it? Now, the Gemara finally asked this question. So here's what we've established. We've established that a woman is believed to say, my husband died, which would allow her to marry another man, but she's not permitted to say, my brother-in-law died, and therefore I'm exempt from Yibam. Why is that? To which the Gemara says, because they will say, what's the issue? The issue is that sometimes she hates her brother-in-law. So because she hates her brother-in-law, hates the idea of being married to her brother-in-law, what will happen? She'll fabricate something. I will say, she's a smart lady, so she knows that, well, at the end of the day, what's the extent of her exposure, of her halachic exposure? It's a lot. And the truth is, remember, we don't pass like Rabbi Akiva anyway. So meaning her kids aren't going to be mamzerim. It's a lav. So because, again, her maximum exposure is a lav, maybe she would lie if she really does not want this marriage. On the other hand, the girl said, we assume a woman is not going to lie that her husband died, because Lamaisa, again, that union, if she really were lying, that union with another man would be punishable, again, by Misa, by death, and her children are absolutely mamzerim. That is a huge amount of exposure for her, which we assume a normal, regular person would not accept. So Mar says, well, if that's the case, if that's the... Right. Am I done? Right. So,
next point.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So we're going to have to move on. My time is up. So again,
TA's on time.
TA's on time. Good, Baruch Hashem. Good, I got that one also just now. All divisions are opening on time at Talmudical Academy. Good, all right. So I don't even have kids here anymore. I'm still getting text messages. All right, so the Gemara says like this. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry. So Eid Echad Nami. So why don't we say the same thing by an Eid Echad, right? Why don't we say the same thing by one witness? So we'll say the problem, of course, with this logic is, why don't you say the same thing ultimately again with an Eid Echad? Then remember, we'll say the whole idea as to why we believe in Eid Echad is why? Is because we assume, we're relaxing the standards for Eidos under the assumption that what? That she, the wife, is going to do her own due diligence. If you're telling me that there's a concern over here that she hates her brother-in-law, and Lamaisa what? And Lamaisa what? And therefore, again, she's going to lie, so then we shouldn't really believe an Eid Echad either. So the Gemara ends off with this kasha on this line of reasoning. But what does come out is that halacha lemaisa, a woman is believed. So we have, so far, here's what we have. We have an eid achar is believed to testify that her husband died. An eid achar is believed to go out and make her obligated in Yibum. And an eid achar is believed to exempt her from Yibum. Or in other words, an eid achar is believed in everything. But again, Rabbi, remember, as we have established, the whole idea of believing on an eid achar is essentially we're shifting the burden. Whereas normally the burden of proof is on the legal system to go ahead and provide bona fide eidos about certain realities. Here, because of Aguna, we relax the standards of Eidus, but shift the burden to her. So now again, we're going to let you get married, but the burden is on you to ascertain and to prove that which the Eid Echad said is correct. However, again, for the woman herself, she is believed to say that her husband ultimately died, but is not believed to say that her brother-in-law died, and therefore she's not subject to Yibum and can marry into the general population. Zem Medrash Rabbi Elazar ben Masya. So we'll say again, if you remember, going all the way back to the Mishnah, So the Mishnah ended off by saying, where was this Mishnah? So the Mishnah was on Tzadik Beis. So the Mishnah said, the Mishnah quoted this drasha, Es zudash v'lozav en masya, v'isha grusha mi'isha, v'lo mi'isha eno isha. This was the case ultimately again of where a woman got a get from a man who she was not really married to. And therefore again, Rav ben Masya said that such a get would not pass off from the kahuna. So says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Havale l'Rabbi Elazar l'medrash be marginisa, v'darash b'chaspa. So Rav Yehuda is the name of Rav. Rabbi Elazar ben Masya, he could have darshened such a beautiful pearl. Instead, all he did was he darshened a pottery shard. In other words, it's pretty tough. So he was saying that he could have done so. He had such an opportunity for a drasha, and instead he missed out on something. My marginisa, what was the pearl that he could have darshened that he missed? The sanya of the isha grusha meisha. When the Torah is supposed to, they're talking about the restriction on the kohen to go ahead and marry a woman, a divorcee. So the kohen is not permitted to marry a divorcee. Afilu lo niskar she'ela meisha psula l'kuhuna. Even if she's only divorced from her husband, she is still pasul kahuna. V'hainu reach haget to pasul kahuna, and this is what we refer to as reach haget. That ultimately, again, is pasul by the kahuna. Both say, what is this referring to? If you look at Rashi, lo niskar she'ela miisha kegon shekasav laget. V'amar la hari at migoreshes mimeni v'i at mutaris lachol adam shlo niskar shezul gamrei ela miisha nifreda. So say, when we get to Gittin, we will see this situation. Remember, the most important phrase in a get is Hari at migureshes mimeni, vahari at mutaris lechol adam. You are divorced from me, and you are now permitted to every man. If a husband leaves out that phrase, let's say a husband says, "You know what? I can't stand living with you, but I can't fathom the thought of you living with another man." So here's what we're gonna do: I'm gonna divorce you, but you're not permitted to marry someone else. So let's say obviously such a get like that is batel. Such a get that's not a get. You could put conditions on a get. You could put certain covenants or restrictions on a get, but you can never limit her ability to marry anyone else. Once you do that, you have eroded the very fundamental foundation of the get. So let's say a man gives a woman a get that says, "I'm divorced from you, but you can't marry anyone else." Well, such a get is batel. But interesting enough, as we will see in Maseches Gittin, such a get passes her the kahuna, even though she's not a divorcee. Meaning, what does that mean? Let's say again, he gives you this get. The get is batel, and then 2 minutes later, he drops dead. Mysterious circumstances, right? He drops dead right after that. So now, what's I see? I'll say, she's an almana. If she's an almana, she can marry a kohen. She's not an almana. Meaning, she is an almana, but she still can't marry a kohen. Why? Because she has something called reach haget. Reach haget means scent of a get. Meaning that it's not a real get, but it leaves like a get residue, and a scent of a get or get residue is enough to pass her from the kahuna. So the Gemara darshan is that the pearl that she could have darshan was isha grusha miisha, that even if you have a woman who's what? Only divorced from her husband. Meaning her divorce was not effective legabe anyone else, but only legabe her husband. It wasn't even fully halakhically effective legabe her husband. But she had a divorce that only impacted her husband. Even though such a divorce is not a good divorce, she is still pasul l'kahuna. V'hainu reach haget pasul l'kahuna. Mishnah. Misha, I'll say, now we're talking about the reverse case now. Misha halcha ishto l'medina sayam. So a man's wife went overseas. So what happens? Witness comes along and says, Your wife died. So what does he do? He marries his sister, his sister-in-law, excuse me, right? He marries his deceased wife's sister, which we'll say again, is fine. He's fine, except ba'achrakach basa ishto. Honey, I'm home, right? So we've got a little bit of a problem now. So what happens? His wife comes home, says to her sister, "Oh, so nice to see you here, right? Thank you for helping out while I'm gone." And she finds out things are a little bit different. Ba'achrakach basa ishto. So also, of course, the shaila now is, and he thought his wife was dead. Therefore, he married her sister. Now it turns out wife is alive. So, So remember, he is permitted, she, the first wife, is permitted to come back to her husband. Right? Ishta muteres lachzorlo. She is permitted to return to her husband. And I will say, umuter bekrovos shnia. The man is still permitted to go ahead and would be permitted to marry the relatives of the second wife. Even though it turns out that that second marriage was illegal, essentially what we're going to see is that that marriage is considered to be halachically like it never happened. There was never a marriage, as it turns out. Now, I will say, generally, if you have a forbidden relationship with a woman and you become prohibited to her, you become prohibited to her relatives as well. What the Mishnah is saying over here is the nature, when the man married his wife's sister, and now it turns out that his wife was not alive, we do not view them as having engaged, or we do not view him. It's going to be a little bit of a distinction between him and her. We do not view him as having engaged in a forbidden relationship. And therefore, again, technically speaking, were his wife to now die, he'd be permitted to go ahead and marry his sister-in-law's relatives. Ushnia muteres bekrovav. Similarly, again, and we'll define these cases similarly, shnia means the second wife would be permitted to go, meaning the sister-in-law would be permitted to marry the relatives of the husband, meaning that we don't view them as if they engaged in an illicit relationship, at least from his perspective. Ve'imesa rishona. I'm sorry? Correct. Ve'imesa rishona. Now, both again, there's going to be a double standard. It's not a double standard in a negative way, but we're going to see that it just has a radically different impact on her versus him. It's just the reality of things. Ve'imesa, however, again, if she dies, you know, both say the she, ve'imesa rishona, this is if first wife dies, muter b'shnia. So both say, let's say again, so play this out. So man's married to wife number one. Wife number one goes overseas. He gets testimony that she's dead. He marries her sister. She's wife number two. So now wife number one comes back. Obviously, again, we'll talk about the impact on wife number two, but the Mishnah just told us that essentially, again, from the husband's perspective, he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't intentionally engage in an immoral act. So he's permitted in wife number two, sister-in-law's relatives. We'll discuss who they are. Furthermore, again, if wife number one were to die, he would be permitted to what? To go ahead and marry wife number two, so to speak, again, his sister-in-law again.
The diligence doesn't apply here. So the marriage.
Well, let's see. Amrulo Mesa Ishto. I'll say. I know it's exciting. Let's get to the end. Amrulo Mesa Ishto. No, this is good. We're gonna. Let me just clarify the case. Amrulo Mesa Ishto. Venasa Sachosa. So we'll say again. So what happens? So again, in this case, understand the reason why the circumstances here are different is, remember again, because technically speaking, a man does not become usher through relations with another woman, even someone to whom is forbidden from. This is the fundamental distinction. A woman, when she has relations with another man who's not her husband, even if it's an accident, so to speak, meaning she thinks she didn't do anything wrong, like she thought her husband was dead, she's not liable for that on a punishment level, but de facto she has engaged in adultery, and adultery by definition prohibits her to her husband. However, again, that same reality does not apply to a man. So when a man has relations with a woman who is not his wife, even again, or take it even a step further, a man enters into a relationship which is technically forbidden, but he did not realize that because he thought circumstances were different, he is not precluded from resuming his first marriage. Similarly, Amrulo, Mesa Ishto, they said to a man, your wife died. Vinasa asachoso. So we'll say, we'll see a similar case, but different from the first. Same thing. Wife went overseas. He gets testimony that his wife died. He married her sister. Va'achakach amrulo kayemes haisa umesa. And then they told her, and then they told him what? Listen, there was a mistake. Your wife was alive originally at the time that you married her sister. her sister, and then what? And then he didn't know. He thought she was dead, and then she subsequently died. So meaning, so she's dead now, but at the time that you married her sister, she was still alive. So what's the halacha? Same as the previous Mishnah. Havlad Rishon Mamzer, the Acharon in Mamzer. So both say, children that he had earlier on in the marriage. So Rishon, earlier means what? So now we have to go back and look at the timeline. So children that he had with his second wife, who happens to be his sister-in-law, children that he had while wife number one was alive, are Mamzerim. Because they're both saying, remember, marrying your wife's sister while she is still alive, even right, marrying two sisters, is an erva, right? That's an immoral act. And by definition, that's not just according to Rabbi Akiva. Everybody would agree that that produces mamzerim. So children that were produced from the second union while wife number one was alive are mamzerim. However, achron a mamzer, but children produced later on. Later on means what? After wife number one had already died. Ain mamzer, they're not mamzerim. Rabbi Yossi says, Kol sheposel ayidei achirin. Rabbi Yossi makes a little bit of an enigmatic statement, which we'll define in the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi says, Kol sheposel ayidei achirin. Anyone who has the ability to passel someone else, posel ayidei atzmo, he or she herself, he himself becomes posel. The kol she'ein leposel ayidei achirin, anyone who doesn't passel anyone else, Eino posel ayidei atzmo, does not become posel himself. Rashi already points out over here, b'gemara mefarish, and the Gemara will try to figure out what exactly Rabbi Yossi is saying. V'af agav, so we'll say, watch this, and now the Gemara is going to analyze this case. V'af agav de'ozel ishto v'giso l'medinas hayam. So we'll say, listen to this case. Let's say the case was the following. So a man is married to a woman, and let's say his wife, so let's say there are two sisters. Two sisters married to two men, not to two brothers. Two sisters married to two men. And what happens? So we'll call them Reuven and Shimon. So Reuven and Shimon are married to Rachel and Leah. So let's say again, Rachel and Shimon. So Rachel is Reuven's wife, and Shimon is Reuven's brother-in-law. Go overseas together. They travel overseas together, and what happens? And the Rabbi say, now what happens? Now testimony comes back that says what? That they died. Let's play this out. So now what happens? Reuven's wife, and Reuven's brother-in-law, meaning the man married to his sister-in-law, go overseas. And Reuven gets testimony that they died. So what does Reuven do? Reuven marries his sister-in-law, his wife's sister, his brother-in-law's wife. And then what happens? What happens in the middle of Shavuot Brachos? So what ends up happening? Right, well, not Shavuot Brachos, but what happens? They both come back. So we'll say, so now let's play this out. When wife and brother-in-law come back, so remember, Reuven's now married to his sister-in-law. And we'll say, what's the sister-in-law status? She is usher to her husband. Why is she usher to her husband? Because she essentially committed adultery. Again, unintentional, but she had relations with another man. So see, she is usher to her husband. Afilu hachi, eshes giso asira, ishto sharia. So we'll say, again, the Gemara says, no, it's a little bit of like an inequity over here. Because what happens? So now, Reuven married his sister-in-law, thinking that his wife and his brother-in-law were dead already. They came back. So now it turns out that Reuven's sister-in-law, who's wife number two, is prohibited to her husband. She can't go back to her husband. Why? Because she's essentially, again, unintentionally engaged in adultery. But yet what? Reuven's wife is permitted to come back to him. So I might have thought, v'lo amrinon, mitoch shene'es ra'esh ha'es giso ha'giso, te'eser ishtav, so both say, I might have thought that maybe we should say that what? Maybe we should say that since the sister-in-law becomes prohibited to her husband, so to what? Reuven's wife should become prohibited to him. And just kind of like make it the same, you know, make it equitable, so to speak. Everybody pretty much is in the same boat. But the Gemara points out, clear from here, that we don't say that. That even though, again, Nebach, the sister-in-law, cannot go back to her husband because she has, you know, she has unfortunately committed an unintentional act of adultery. But yet again, Reuven's wife can't return back to Reuven. To which the Gemara says, Lema masnis nidolk Rabbi Akiva. So say that our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva. Why? D'i Rabbi Akiva, because if our Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Akiva, Havila achas grushaso. Then I will say, according to Rabbi Akiva, the truth is Reuven would not be permitted to go ahead and resume living with his first wife. Why? Because his first wife would be the sister of his grusha. Why? Watch this. This Sanyo, Kol Raya Shabbatora, Ein Tzrichas Hemenu Get. In general, it will say if you marry someone who is an erva, if you marry someone who is prohibited to you based on the fact that she is one of the immoral relationships, so such a marriage is not binding, and therefore because it's not binding, you do not need a get to dissolve it. Chutz me'eshes ish sheniseis apibes. But there are a couple of exceptions. Exception number one is if you have a married woman who got remarried based on the testimony of Beis Din, which is our case, right? Erechad comes along and says, her husband died, she gets remarried, it turns out that again her husband is alive, she needs a get to get out, she doesn't need a get from marriage number two because there's no real marriage, but what? We mandate a get. Rabbi Akiva Mosif af ishes ach v'achos isha. And Rabbi Akiva also includes in that case, if you end up accidentally marrying your brother's wife or your wife's sister. So Rabbi Akiva adds in these cases where if you accidentally thought, let's say, that your wife was dead, and you go ahead and you marry her sister, so the Maaseh Rabbi Akiva says in that situation you require a get as well. You require a get as well. The Chayvan of Rabbi Akiva by a get. Now, boss, I listen to this. So now Rabbi Akiva says in the case where you accidentally saw, a person thought his wife was dead. I mean, you know, she was supposed to be home from 7 Mile, you know, like at 7. And now, you know, it's not. So you know what happened? So he married her sister. So what happened? Okay, I know. I have to go back and edit. So what happened? He married her sister. So Rabbi Akiva says, in that case, again, Rabbi Akiva says, you're going to have to give your sister-in-law, i.e. wife number two, a get. Now watch this. Therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva, in this case, where in our case of our Mishnah, where the wife went overseas, husband hurt, got testimony that she was dead, marries her sister, now she comes back. So everyone makes it sound like what? That wife number one could simply go back to a marriage and no problem. Except according to Rabbi Akiva. According to Rabbi Akiva, before the husband sends wife number two, i.e. the sister-in-law on her way, what does he have to do? He has to give her a get. And now once he gives her a get, the chayvan of Rabbi Akiva by a get, the meila isra alei, Dahavile achas grushasel. Now I will say, according to Rabbi Akiva, once you give wife number two a get, therefore what? Therefore, wife number one becomes what? The sister of your grusha, and you are not permitted to marry the sister of your grusha. So according to Rabbi Akiva, the Mishnah is not correct. According to Rabbi Akiva, you should not be able to continue living with wife number one. V'lav itmar lo, did we not say about this? Amar Rav Gidl, Amar Rav Chiya Bar Yosef, Amar Rav, Hai Eishes Ach, Hei Chidami. So what's the case of Eishes Ach? What's the meaning? We'll say that when we went back and we tried to qualify the statement of Rabbi Akiva, what's the case of Eishes Ach where he says you need a get? Kigon Shekidesh Achiv Es Haisha. The case was where the brother went ahead and was Mekadesh a woman. V'halach L'medina Sayam. And what happened? He then went overseas. Brother went overseas. Vishama Shemes Achiv, and he heard that his brother died. Va'amad Vinases Ishto, and as a result, he went ahead and he married his sister-in-law. The Amri Inshi Hach Kamatanahava, and then Rabbi said, what happens? Brother number one comes back. So people will assume that perhaps again, brother number one made some type of condition with his kiddushin. That condition was not fulfilled, and that's why brother number two married her. Vahai Shapir Nasiv, and brother number two married her, and that's why what? And therefore, that's why the brother, we'll call him brother number two, would have to go ahead and give her a get. Vahai achos ishanami. And so too, what's the case where Rabbi Akiva mandates that you have to give a get when you marry your wife's sister? So what's the case? Hey chidami, kigon shekidesh es ha'isha, where a man betrothed the woman, v'halcha l'medina sayam, and then he went overseas, v'shama, v'halcha l'medina sayam, went overseas, v'shama shemesa, Amad v'shama shemesa, Amad v'nasa esachosa. And what happens? He heard ultimately again that she died. She went overseas. A man was mekadesh a woman. She went overseas. He heard that she died. Amad v'nasa esachosa. He went ahead and he therefore married her sister. And therefore, what happens? She comes back. the Amri Inshi Hach Kamai Satanai Hava. People will assume that the kiddushin you did with the first woman was based on a condition, and then what happened? The condition wasn't fulfilled, and therefore Havilei Bikidushay, and therefore Havilei Bikidushay V'Hashaper Nasiv, and therefore the Tanai wasn't fulfilled, and therefore he rightfully married the sister. So what's like what the Gemara is suggesting over here is those cases where Rabbi Akiva holds that you need a get in a situation where ultimately again you marry your brother's wife, or you go out and you marry your wife's sister. Those are cases of where kiddushin, where only kiddushin was affected with the first party. And therefore the assumption is, people will assume that there was a tanai in the kiddushin never took effect, and when you married your brother's wife, so to speak, she wasn't really your brother's wife, she was a woman with whom your brother had kiddushin with a tanai, or there was a woman with whom you were mekudeshes al tanai, and the tanai didn't work out, and therefore you married her sister. In those cases, that's where you require a get, because people will assume that the second marriage is totally valid. However, Ellen Nisuin, but Rabosai, in this case over here, where we're talking about where a man, his wife went overseas, he thought she died, and he married her sister, a full-fledged marriage, will anyone go ahead and say that there was a Tanai Nisuin? So Rabosai, remember, there's no such thing as Nisuin al Tanai. There's only Kiddushin al Tanai. Because there's no Nisuin al Tanai, maybe even Rabbi Akiva would say what? Maybe even Rabbi Akiva would agree that in this circumstance, you do not need a get. Meaning Rabbi Akiva perhaps only requires a get in circumstances where Lemaisa people would assume that the first marriage was based on a Tanai, and therefore the second marriage was a full-fledged marriage. But in this case over here, everyone is going to very quickly realize that what? That what? That this was a mistaken marriage under mistaken circumstances, mistaken information, and therefore even Rabbi Akiva would agree that what? That you, that second wife does not require a get. Why is this important for us? Because therefore even Rabbi Akiva would agree with the ruling of the Mishnah, because ruling of the Mishnah is that when the wife goes overseas, husband thinks that she's dead, he marries her sister, she then comes back, it turns out that she's alive, that what's the halacha? That he is, she, wife number one, is permitted to continue living with her husband, and even Rabbi Akiva would agree with that, because in this case where the husband married the second wife, even Rabbi Akiva would agree that it's a mistaken marriage. No one's going to assume that it was a marriage al tanai, and therefore what? No need for get. Therefore, wife number one is not considered to be achos grusha. So, all right, so we'll stop over here. We'll pick up on the bottom over here tomorrow in the session.